It's incredible. So you hired and trained someone to join SpaceX. I'm generalizing, but
hired someone to work with me, and then she graduated and then eventually went to SpaceX. But yes, I helped mold her in, the year we worked together.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Baubert Marketing LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. With Lori Sussobanani. Lori, what's up? How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited. We've talked for like 15, 20 minutes just before we started because honestly, you're awesome to talk to. You had mentioned that some of the, episodes, it's like I know the person, and I had to admit a lot of times I had just met the person like for the first or second time. And I hope this is one of those episodes as well where, we don't know each other that well. The listeners might know you very well or not at all, but I want everyone to kind of get to know us quickly and get to know what you and your business does. And we'll get into your business. Again, I'm using your name as a cheat sheet. So it's Elsis. And you're going to have to explain to me where the name Elsis came from, and then we'll get into exactly what you do after that.
Perfect. Well, it's very nice to be here, and I also enjoy our conversation prior. Elsis came from needing to have a business name to register my company as an LLC, and my lawyer could not do anything without a business name, and against good advice, I didn't want communications or marketing to be in my business name. I wanted it to sort of be vague. And so time was ticking. I wanted to get this done. And so I took my maiden name, flipped it, and took a word that doesn't exist, and then had to create a story around it. So the story is now that when you see something familiar, but it's not in the right way, it just makes you think about things differently. Like when I told you what that was, earlier, you were like, yeah, now I see it. So that's the kind of reaction I like.
It's great because you're a communications pro, you're a storyteller, PR, digital content. You tell me what exactly, what's an ordinary day look like? What's an ordinary client? Tell me exactly what you do at Elsis.
There's nothing really ordinary, and I pride myself on that. I come from a very corporate background in advertising and media and PR, where nothing was ordinary, and I really thrived on that. I remember early in my career, I would leave a post-it note on my computer at the end of the day with like the top three things I had to get done the next day. And because it was such a chaotic environment, none of those things were typically what was important when I got to work in the morning. And so I think that's sort of come on into my business as well. Like, I don't want to take multiple clients on at the same time that have the same audience that I would be doing the same thing for. I definitely work in a lot of tech and healthcare clients, but they're not the same, kind of the same rote thing for each of them. They're always a little bit different. Or at least not at the same time, they're different. And I really enjoy that. But ordinary isn't really in my vocabulary, but I would say that I, in my corporate world life, I worked basically in every industry. And as a consultant and being on my own, I have definitely gravitated to technology, healthcare, education, food and beverage, and travel and tourism. And tech sort of has been like the center of that for now.
Yeah. Well, it's not ordinary to leave a corporate environment and take on all this risk of being your own business. Why did you make that decision to leave the corporate world and start something brand new?
Well, this is a great question. So when I started my career and continued through corporate, I have always been in very entrepreneurial roles. So the first job I had when I started working in New York City was with a company who was very established. The company was very established in Europe, and their first day in New York City was my first day at work. You know, we went furniture shopping together, yet they were super established across the pond. And so it was very scrappy. I was there almost 5 years. So the whole time it was very much a startup. There were four full-time employees. And now it's part of Ogilvy, which is one of the largest conglomerates. And I left there and I went to an ad agency on Madison Avenue called DDB, which is also a multinational ad agency. I joined the business development team, which was basically revamped. My boss had started about a month before I got there. And so we basically built that team from the ground up with the support of obviously a big agency network. And in there, when I left, when I was hired, I was the second person. And when I left, our team was about eight people. And we had some of the most successful years of new business that DDB as a whole had ever seen. Thank you. Awesome. And, teamwork. And then I left and I went to NBC, which is also a very large company.
Very large.
But the company that I had joined had just been acquired. So when you work at NBC, you're called a peacock. And so we were baby peacocks because the company had just been acquired. And so we were still very new to the NBC family. So again, very much a startup in there. And then I left NBC about four and a half years after I was there to actually take a sabbatical. So I left and went to South America for a couple of months. And when I, before I had left, I had set some freelance in advance so that I did not come home to nothing. And my boyfriend at the time, who is now my husband, didn't think quitting his job and just going to travel was like an awesome idea. So I still had to pay my half of the rent when I came home. It was supposed to be temporary. We were planning on leaving New York. And I loved freelancing so much. I wound up doing it for almost 2 years until I found a full-time job at a company that is in Atlanta, and it's called World 50, and it brings C-suite executives together from the Global 500 to one-to-one networking for different industries and verticals. And so that company had been in existence about 10 years, but they had never had a director of marketing. So again, I was joining in like this very entrepreneurial space. So when I got laid off from that company, we actually moved to Rochester because we weren't going to stay in Atlanta and just knew we wanted to stay on the East Coast. But in my head, we were never going to live in Rochester. My husband grew up here and we had been here for the summer and the holidays. And I was just like, yeah, I don't think I can. I want like a big city and, you know, all that. So
yeah,
about 8 months after living in my mother-in-law's house, and we get along famously, so it was not an issue. I was like, I think I could live here. And it was really nice being around family. And the summers obviously here cannot be beat. And so I think we got here in March of 2015. And by Thanksgiving, I had told my husband, I think I could live in Rochester. And we were basically, I was still looking for jobs from like Boston to DC minus New York City. And so I was taking like long weekends to go interview, and I was being really particular because of my experience in Atlanta. And after some time, I had picked up freelance work and I was working remote with a tech startup out in San Diego. I was working remotely with Verizon. And so I had said, I think I could live here. And after he picked his job off the floor, I said, but I have to have my own company. Like my parents aren't here. I don't want to have to like take time off from a company to have to travel to see family. That's not, you know, vacation.
Sure.
That just counts as like normal travel. Right. And so I was like, yeah, I could live here. The two criteria were that I could have my own company and go out on my own and really like hang my shingle. And the other was that we had to have a plow in the winter for our driveway.
It's a good piece of criteria.
Yeah. So we're coming up onto 6 years. So, so that was really the Kickstarter to say, like, I'll have my own company. And that was really desirable because the 2 years that I did it after NBC, I just really enjoyed it. I love being able to pick my clients. I have a biz dev background. So like going and like finding clients didn't feel super scary.
Sure.
And so it's grown. When we first got here, it took a little while to get like a Rochester client, 'cause I was really doing work all over the country and in some other countries. But I really wanted to feel like I belonged here. And so it was really important to me to find a local client or two pre-COVID, obviously, because I wanted to be able to go into an office as needed and not just feel yes. like super remote. Obviously, that's changed with COVID now, but it was really like a big win when I got my first Rochester client. And so I've been doing this now. I filed my LLC in 2018. And I've worked really in these verticals, which I mentioned are technology, education, healthcare, medical device, travel and tourism, and food and beverage. No, very long answer to your question.
I like hearing your story because of the fact, you know, you came from a biz dev background, you're an entrepreneur, you worked in corporate. I think it's a great story because a lot of, you know, nowadays a lot of people are like, quit your day job, follow your passion, be an entrepreneur. But then it's so hard to find work and it's hard to find clients. And there's so much that goes on in the business plan and the accounting that I'm pulling my hair out because there's so many skill sets I don't have yet that I'm learning as an entrepreneur. But you're an example of someone that learned all this as an entrepreneur in a company. So then when you actually went off on your own, you've got a little bit ground to stand on. You already know what you're doing. And I'm wondering, what exactly do you do? So I'm in a communications field as well, but I never look at it as like competition. I look at it as collaboration.
Absolutely.
Because I know you've got skill sets that are way above mine, and I might have skill sets you don't have. Who knows? I guess I don't know yet. But what specifically do you do for your clients? Is it the PR end of things, the writing end of things? Maybe give us a case study or kind of like a general approach of.
Yeah. So my elevator pitch kind of talks about it. So I say that I build and grow companies' reputations to increase awareness, business results, and credibility. And what does that really mean?
Yeah, the question is, how do you do that?
Exactly. So I call myself a non-traditional publicist. So it's not just about the PR. It's not just about the marketing. It's not just about the visibility, but it's how do you do that? So awareness and credibility and business results all tie into these things I had just talked about, the marketing, the biz dev, the PR, being a good researcher, being able to come up with a strategy, thinking long-term, helping to launch new products and services, and doing that all together, right? So writing is a huge part of it. Writing for people, ghostwriting. So it's like this bubble of communications. I'm under it. But there's things you do that I do not do, which again, collaboration, because I think it's always good to be able to tell clients I have a referral or I don't do that, but I can definitely give you somebody yes. that can. And so my world is sort of in that communications space, yet, you know, going out into the business development and writing and the thought leadership and launches, which all ties into communications. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of that umbrella, but you asked for case studies. So like some examples of work I've done a lot of executive ghostwriting. So I can't really tell you about that.
Oh, okay. Go to my website, guys. No, I'm just kidding. I don't have a ghostwriter yet.
But I think one of my clients was a food and beverage company. And I did a lot of things about, it was Love Beats, which is actually local to Rochester. And everything we were doing had to be put on hold during the pandemic because we were doing lots of in-person events and we were doing lots of sampling and we were working with local restaurants and had gotten cocktails on menus and kind of partnered around town locally. And we were going to do some stuff with like the RBTL and the Finger Lakes wine region. And so being able to just get the name out that way. And a lot of the goals there were related to hiring and being able to be seen as a company, you know, that it was a leader in the area. I've also worked with clients for speaking opportunities and getting, you know, visibility that way. I've also worked with clients social media influencers. And in fact, the client that I did that with is a very large medical device company. And the influencers were not the typical influencers. They were women 60 plus. So that was, you know, an interesting space to be in. I've worked with clients writing website copy. I've worked with clients really putting together their strategy and how they want to go about, you know, media coverage for a product launch. So it really all expands over that space.
Yeah, everything from ghostwriting, copywriting, 60 plus social media content, everything imaginable. And it makes me wonder, well, two questions. Let me first ask a shorter one. Is this more for like the budding business that hasn't developed a brand or doesn't know what they're doing yet? Or do you help people with rebranding as well?
So I like to say my sweet spot is funded startups to global 500s. And I would say when I say funded startups, usually like on the cusp of a Series A or beyond. But because I was getting a lot of asks from much smaller businesses and I wanted to be cognizant of budgets, I actually last summer created a one-to-one advisory, which is offered on my website. And it's an option to meet once or three times. And it's designed for small businesses and priced accordingly. And we basically have big brainstorm sessions. I ask my clients to do a little bit of homework for me in advance and fill out this questionnaire. Then I do a lot of homework. And then we come together, have like a bit of, you know, brainstorming, you know, figuring out what might work, asking some more questions. And then when we finish that call, my clients would get basically a to-do list, an actionable to-do list of things that they can implement and not just like, you know, here's update your LinkedIn or something like that. But it would be like, here's the 8 things you must update, you know, and this is do. Or I had a client who wanted to be on a local NPR station with the launch of a self-published book. Great. And so I gave him the tools to do that and some other coverage as well. So it's basically, I can tell you what to do. You just have to DIY it. And then in some cases, larger companies have said, well, can you implement this for us? And then that would be, you know, an extra scope. But yeah, the one-to-one advisory is really designed for a solopreneur or you know, a bootstrap startup.
I like that. I mean, I feel like there's three main situations: the please just do everything for me, the I just want to do it myself, I'm only talking to you because I want to basically talk about myself, but I'm going to do everything myself anyways, and the I have confidence I can do some of this, but I need direction, and it's so much research that I know I can do the research, but I imagine you can come into play and you already have the right kind of glasses on to microscope into exactly what they need quicker, so they don't have to waste a bunch of time trying to figure it all out on their own. Or you can be stubborn like me at times and try to figure it all out on your own. But it's nice to have someone to mentor you and kind of walk you along.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Exactly. And my father-in-law was a physician, and he used to always say that if you let a patient talk, they're ultimately going to tell you what's wrong. And so I feel that is the case with the advisory, especially because clients will come with like, these are all the things I don't know and I want to get done. And it's like, well, let's really distill like what's the most important thing to the growth of the business or to what your goal ultimately is, because so many people, myself included, will spin wheel circling on something that ultimately doesn't move the needle.
Right. Oh my gosh. And the other question I had for you was basically in terms of like, so I'm thinking of all the kinds of variety of clients you're working with, and you generally have a general skill set for a lot of things that you can kind of weave your way into different businesses. But I'm wondering, are you just taking on anybody who needs help? Or is it like, I know some people niche industry. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into my whole like motto, but basically I'm more niche the kind of person I like to work with. Like I want to work with someone who's hungry, growth potential, willing to learn, willing to give me autonomy, willing to trust me. There's certain things I look at like in a personality of a business owner. And I'm wondering, are you like me that you're looking at more like a personality type? Or how do you find yourself in all these different roles? Like, is there any qualifications you're looking for?
It's so funny you say that. And I will share with you, I have a document I've put together over the years that like what makes like an excellent fit, what makes a great fit, what makes a good fit, what's probably not a great fit. And so I have different things in each of those categories. And because I know what I like to do and I know the kind of people I like to do it for, the kinds of companies. And so, and like the different criteria that you were listing, a lot of that is in there. And I think that that really, when I have found what makes the excellent or great, those are really the ones that I feel like that's my sweet spot, right? So it doesn't make sense otherwise. And it might not be a bad client. It might just not be a great fit. So there's typically, you know, you obviously can talk to somebody, and I have a separate questionnaire I send out before I do a proposal, and kind of putting out that, and, you know, you have another conversation and share a proposal and we talk through it. And all of those touch points, you can kind of see like, is this person invested in this? You know, what does this look like? You know, am I getting pushed off? Who is my contact? So I typically, depending on the size of the company, work with a CEO, a COO, a CMO. And so that is also an indicator as well.
Absolutely. And we've talked about, you know, finding people to work with. We've kind of touched on mentorship a little bit, networking a little bit. I kind of want to get into that because before we basically clicked record, we talked a little bit about networking. And I'm wondering how you network. How do you figure out who to meet? How do you make good introductions? How do you know when to be mentored? How do you know that someone's going to make a good mentee? I know these are like a million questions, but as someone more experienced in the networking realm, what are some of the things you've learned about networking and mentorship and, you know, mutually beneficial relationships? Any great speaking points?
Well, one of the biggest things is in networking, you have to keep up with your network, right? Like you don't want to be the person that's like, I know we haven't talked in 100 years, but I need a favor or something like, you know, or could you make me an introduction or something like that? And, you know, I think there's people that like go out and like click invite on LinkedIn to anybody. And I've been really particular, like I've had to have had a conversation with you or, you know, something like that. Like, right. So because I feel like my network is, you know, my calling card. And I feel like, if you were to say, Lori, I'd like an introduction to X, Y, and Z, doesn't that look sort of crappy on me to be able to say like, I don't know them, you know? So, sure. So yeah, I am definitely don't just accept anyone random on LinkedIn. And certainly if somebody random is writing without a note, certainly no. But I think that, you know, just being able to like meet other people and learn about what people are doing, like you said, like collaboration over competition, like I am in several groups and there are people that do what I do. And some of those like people I talk to regularly because our businesses overlap in such a way that there might not be a great fit. Because I actually just finished up a big project for a global media company that was launching into the US market. And the woman was like, you know, you've got like the business and tech angle. I have, you know, the media entertainment and, you know, the country experience that was nice. Coming over. And so we collaborated and it was so much fun because we both do the same thing. So we understood like the challenges. It was just where our expertise was for that client. And so it worked out awesome. And I just think that being able to have that network for within your industry, but then also outside of it. And because I am working in typically these five industries, I sort of want to keep a pulse on all of that. And so, you know, I could be working with somebody that, you know, I worked with a long time ago that might work in CPG and now they're at a healthcare company, and just, you know, authentically catching up, not just like a rote, like, hi, great job. Like, you know, like a genuine note and no thumbs up. And then in terms of like finding mentors, I feel like that they've just been around like in my career. I've had some amazing bosses and we've stayed in touch. I've come across people in my, you know, entrepreneurial role that I feel are very much mentors to me. And then I really am a big believer in, you know, mentoring young women. And so women that are in communication space. And so I just am like their biggest cheerleader. And like, we talk periodically and they tell me, you know, what their struggles are, or if they're looking for something. There's a couple that are in the entrepreneurial space. So if I see an opportunity, like I tag it or I send it to them. One woman that I know, is in DC and I tagged her on something on LinkedIn that I was like, that is so perfect for her. And like 2 weeks later, she was like, I have my final interview with them. And she did a 6-month project with them and, and continued some work. So yeah, it just makes me excited to see that. And one of my best stories is, when I was in Atlanta, my marketing department of myself needed an intern. And so I hired a woman from the University of Georgia and she was fantastic. And we've stayed in touch and she actually is literally a rocket scientist now at SpaceX. So all I do is like support her and like, I'm so excited about her career. And, you know, and that was sort of one of my like feathers in my cap because I feel like I hired her. Like I made a great hire. And so I love seeing what she's up to and staying in touch with her.
It's incredible. Yeah. So you hired and trained someone to join SpaceX. I'm generalizing, but
I hired someone to work with me and then she graduated and then eventually went to SpaceX. But yes, I helped mold her in, you know, the year we worked together.
No, I love it. It's just the other day, I'm big in the music scene and I had forgot all about it. A buddy I know not very well, he drums in a band I really like. I don't know them very well. And I forgot probably 6 months ago, they were looking for a drummer and I like sent a private message and I tagged him in the post and I forgot I even did that. And then he's been playing with the band for 6 months and he messages me going, thanks for that introduction. I really like playing with those guys. And I'm like, I forgot I even made that introduction. But just those little touch points and those little, you know, movements to help someone out can make a huge difference. And just watching people achieve is incredible.
Yeah, always. I just feel like, you know, they'll be, you know, where I am one day and hopefully they will, you know, pay it forward.
Absolutely. You mentioned how you've got your pulse on like five different industries at a time. How do you do that? Whether it's time management or like, how do you stay up to date on everything? I know in the marketing industry, there's Google, there's SEO, there's web design, there's pay-per-click, there's video advertising, there's content marketing, there's influencer marketing, there's product marketing. It's like, I get kind of jumbled all the time. And I'm wondering, how do you keep your finger on the pulse of so many major industries like tech and, you know, so on and so forth?
Well, one, I love reading, so that helps. But the second, I have curated my Twitter feed because I reach out to journalists regularly for clients. So my Twitter feed is sort of a combination of the journalists that are writing about all of these things. So it's very much a very curated feed for me.
Nice. Okay. Smart.
And so I would suggest if anybody was not in doing media outreach, I would find reporters of articles that you really enjoy and start following them because they're writing about things that have interested you anyway. And so, yeah, my feed is certainly overwhelming because it's absurd, but it really, if I were to put in a keyword, at least it's all there and it's, you know, I know who I've already followed and, you know, there are definitely reporters that are top of their game. So, yeah, that's my trick.
I think it's smart. I mean, I'm the kind of guy that listens to a lot of long form podcasts, and that's not a very, like, that's not good optimization of your time. But if you look at Twitter, they already reduce the amount of words that can be in each post. So if you have a curated feed of curated content, you're getting like the most refined information. Hopefully, I mean, a lot of Twitter is just kind of hogwash.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, because I'm not on Twitter because of what I see as a lot of hogwash on there. How do you properly curate the people you follow? Like, how, I'm sure that didn't happen overnight. How did you meet these people and figure out who to follow?
Over time, working in different industries and following the reporters for those industries, it's a very interesting feed. And there's a lot of VCs in my feed. So there's a lot of articles about like what, or just Medium posts about what they see in the market. And so it's just definitely can go down rabbit holes. So I try not to do that like regularly, like in the middle of the day kind of thing. But I certainly check on a more regular basis and just sort of like lurking, but being able to see, you know, there's a couple of, you know, key reporters in each industry that I know that I have pitched a bunch, I've worked with them. And so I know, you know, what they're putting out is certainly in my wheelhouse. Obviously, people in media change jobs often and may change their beats. So it does get interesting.
Yeah. I'm with you. This was something new I learned about myself, but I took 3 leadership quizzes, Clifton Springs. I'm just drawing such a blank today, but the Clifton Springs really stood out to me because the number one thing is that my number one thing they said was input. And the short definition of input is I'm a collector. Sometimes it's of things. I'm not like a hoarder type, but in my case, bless you, I'm a collector of information, it said, where I'm like, that makes sense because it could just be little bits and pieces, parts of podcasts, reading 10 minutes in the morning, but you collect all this information as you go in little bits and pieces, and then you start putting the puzzle together long term. And that's something that works for me. That's something that I'm apparently number one in. But for anybody who's maybe even weaker at that, I find that it's not just reading a book and marking yourself as a professional because you completed this book. It's doing this bits and pieces of learning, whether it's on your Twitter feed or podcast feed or reading maybe 10 minutes a day every morning, doing it in bits and pieces. You're like, wow, I know things that I didn't even realize I knew. Where did this even come from?
Yeah, and I did the StrengthsFinder a while ago.
Yes.
I should do that again, but that is an interesting, the results are interesting.
Do you recall what you were high in?
Definitely communicating, and I'm pretty sure Woo was on there. Ooh. I'd have to look. I would retake it. It's been a long time, and I know whenever I did it, it was like the top 5. And I know you can take the longer test and really see where everything ranks.
Yes.
But I know input, which is interesting, was not in there.
Sure.
And I do feel like I'm a collector of information.
Interesting. I mean, it might have been top 10.
Yeah. Top
15. And one thing I'm learning more than ever is I'm not going to get into this whole StrengthsFinder right now, but I was looking at my weaknesses and I was starting to like feel really bad about myself. I'm like, I'm not weak in that. And it's like, they can all be strengths. They're just rated where input's one of my top 5 easily. And even the stuff that are 9, 10, 15, or even 20 can still be a strength. It's just not your number one. So
exactly.
That's what I learned about not being too hard on myself. But.
So I have to ask this because input is number one. Are you a fan of like Jeopardy, like game shows like that?
No.
No.
To be honest, I was kind of surprised that input was my number one, because I've never been like a quizzy historic kind of yeah. type. I think it's more like a nuanced input. I'm trying to figure this out because I was surprised it was number one, but I'm very observational, where I'm not the best at trivia, but I'm really good at like body language and like observing and like kind of sociological kind of stuff. I think it's just like being really quiet as a kid, taking in a lot of input of information from people and then compartmentalizing and trying to figure it out. But I've never been like the trivia nerdy, like history kind of memorized stuff type.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I was surprised. And when you take a strength assessment like that, you're surprised what you see. You're like, am I strong at that? Am I weak at that? Again, with input, I like to take these assessments and try to figure out and analyze and figure out what they mean.
I like it too. Yeah. And think that doing it, you know, I had planned on doing one or two during the pandemic. And I was like, I just think everything's skewed right now, like during lockdown. Mm. Like, I don't think this is a great time to do those. But I do think they're interesting.
That was a question I was asking myself. I'm like, would I answer this differently? Like, is this a biased assessment based on the time of my life? I don't know.
I'm going to say yes.
Well, I've got a mentor, Brad Lee, and he's like, I can pass any assessment I want. It's hard for me, to be honest. Like, he just knows the right answer. And it's like, or let's say you're going for a mental health eval or a drug evaluation. You know that if you say you have issues, then they're going to make you get help. So if you don't want to get help, you just select no. So you can definitely cheat the system. I definitely digress. I don't know what any of this has to do with business, other than it's just more input and information for people to digest and learn from.
Yeah.
Anything like surprising or weird that's happened during COVID or just in your life or with mentees or mentorship? Any like big moments that helped uplift you or change your career? Anything come to mind that you want to relive with us?
I think in terms of just surprising, just I think if I were to have looked back at these big companies that I was at, I just don't know that entrepreneurship was ever on my radar until it was. And then it was on it big time. But when I think about the companies and the roles that I played in those companies, I really just that entrepreneurial piece was really, wow, it was there all along. So that would be something, I think. And then, like I said, the pleasant surprise would be my former intern, who is a rocket scientist.
Yes. And maybe one day do you have any aspirations of going back to corporate, being part of SpaceX, Tesla, or do you like the entrepreneurial role?
No, I like the entrepreneurial. And I have clients that are in, you know, Fortune 50 clients. And so I get that when they're my clients, and then it's like, okay. And I can also do startups, and I can kind of dabble in a lot of different things. And I really enjoy that. So, you know, when I do have the corporate clients, I get that. I get, you know, what I need. And then it's like, I don't need a corporate. I don't want to go back to corporate America, but sure. I'm certainly happy, you know, to work in it and projects or, you know, as a retainer, but I don't think I have any desire to go back. And that could change. And that's changing my mind is my prerogative, but for right now, I don't see that happening.
It could change. I feel like you're in that sweet spot where you're still kind of entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Where you don't work for the corporate environment, but you kind of, you work your way in and then you help them and then you can move on and be in that entrepreneurship role kind of a, you're like a serial entrepreneur, I think the term. I don't, is that a term, right?
I like that. Well, and I've gotten job offers from those bigger clients. Like, would you consider coming back? So right now my answer has been no, but
interesting.
Yeah. So it hasn't struck yet to do it, but I like that. I'm a serial entrepreneur.
Yes. I want to go rapid fire, get to know you a little bit better. Okay. I started to realize the more and more we did it, and I got feedback from guests, but it's like Family Feud mixed with Whose Line Is It Anyway,
okay,
where we're going to do rapid fire questions, either or fill in the blank, but there's no wrong answers and the points don't matter. So you don't have to feel like you have to rush for the 30-second time limit in Family Feud, and it's not the most popular answer. It's the best answer for Lori.
Perfect.
And I often start off with coffee or tea?
Tea.
Beer, wine, or fill in the blank?
I'm game for both, but I'll go with wine.
What about cats, dogs, or fill in the blank for that one?
If I could have any animal, I think I would have a penguin.
A penguin?
Penguin.
So what about favorite season? Do you like the cold? Your penguin likes the cold.
No, summer.
Summertime?
Yeah.
So social media platforms, where do you spend the most time? And I mean, ultimately, as a second part to the question, how do we follow you? How do we keep in touch and connect with you?
I think I would spend my most time on LinkedIn and Twitter. And you can find me on LinkedIn as Lori Cecil Benani. You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find the company Elsys on LinkedIn, which I share a lot of communication tips and some interesting articles that I curate. And then you can go on my website and I have a contact me form and just let me know that you heard me here.
I love it. And I'm going to be following up with you 100% to see if there's ways we can collaborate. To continue a little bit, I'm curious. So you're listening to audio. You're going to get pumped up. Are you turning on music? Or are you turning on a podcast?
It depends my mood, but if I really like need, I think just loud music for sure. Well,
do you have like a go-to track?
I'm going to age myself, but I would say 90s summer is one of my favorite playlists on Spotify.
Love it. 90s summer. And you're in a more introspective mood and you put on a podcast. Any favorites other than this one, of course, but
yes. I do like Armchair Expert and Hypochondriactor with Sean Hayes.
Let's do minimum one, maximum three books I should be reading today.
The Art of Vagabonding by Ralph Potts is it's all about traveling, but I really think it ties into entrepreneurship really well. I'm spacing on the name of the book. It's by Alexandra.
I want to read Art of Vagabonding because I read The 4-Hour Workweek like 6 years ago, and Tim Ferriss, the writer of that one, recommends like The Art of Vagabonding as a part of where he learned a lot of this stuff. Like he's like living in Chile and like Thailand and all these places, but still has an American company, and he's like learning salsa dancing in Mexico and he's doing all these things. And I don't know, I definitely a lifestyle business, and I'd like to learn more about how that's even possible.
Yeah, no, that was a great book. And then the other one, I cheated on Google, but
I was stalling a little bit too because I thought you might.
Thank you. It's called Ask for More by Alexandra Carter. She's a law professor at Columbia, and she wrote a really great book about negotiation.
Ask for More. I like that.
Yes.
On negotiation. This has been fun. Tell us one more time, where do we keep in touch with you? Social media platforms. Should I email you? Should I direct message you? Should I give you a call? Like, if I want to learn more about Lori, what is the best method that isn't going to just overwhelm you?
All right. So you can go to elsys.com, ELSSUS.com. And there's lots of stuff there. And shoot me a note on LinkedIn. Just let me know that you heard me here, and you can shoot me a direct message with a note and
add the note. Don't just click connect. Yeah. Exactly.
And also on LinkedIn, you can follow Elsus, ELSSUS.
Perfect. This has been fun. Did we miss anything? I feel like we could go for another 2 hours, but
No, I think we covered everything. This was really fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone.